Good morning, members. We're going to get the meeting off to start here. We don't have a quorum yet, but we're going to start with Representative Dabney. And you have the bill in hand, sir?
Yes, I do.
All right, go ahead.
Thank you. Members, this is a amendment to existing TIF law as it relates to bioscience and medical, biotechnology and health science industry zones. And it's actually fairly simple, and I brought a diagram. The question before us is, if you have a TIF district that is located within a bioscience zone, currently you can use increment from the TIF district only for public infrastructure, sewers, streets, sidewalks, so on. This legislation proposes that in addition to those public infrastructure costs, that the increment from the TIF district may also be used for the acquisition of land and redevelopment costs within that bioscience zone. Simple enough, I could draw a picture.
Representative Dabney, the back of your picture wasn't quite as bright as I thought it should be.
A simple explanation.
Okay. Any members have any questions? Anybody in the... Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney. I don't know if you... I was like, don't want us to get into this fully. Maybe it's too early in the morning, but could you just talk a little bit about what you think the implications of this might be? You know, let's just have a little bit more discussion about, you know, why do this with TIF? And what would this do to TIF on the larger scale? I mean, would it change the other uses of TIF at all?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, yes, it is too early in the morning. I think this is really just a small tweak to existing TIF law. I don't think it has any implications beyond this. What it does is it allows in only these bioscience zones the increment to be used as businesses within those zones need additional space, as there are redevelopment costs associated with the expansion of businesses, the creation of new businesses within these zones. So it's limited to just the bioscience and medical science zones that exist in the state or will be created. And it anticipates the hope for growth that I think those zones were created to spur.
Representative Leading?
That's fine, thank you.
Okay, Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Michael, could you tell us, is there any other precedent for this with any other TIF project?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, the provisions... Essentially, this is an exception to the percentage restrictions on pooling that was carved out when the bioscience zone law was enacted. That's unique to bioscience zones, and so there really isn't another sort of analogous exempt provision that's, you know, like this in other contexts. And I think the thinking was that. Essentially, the bioscience zones are, you know, there are only three of them in the state, and it was, at the time, it was pretty well contemplated. There's actually one zone and three subzones in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Rochester. And they got very limited tax incentives as compared with Job Z. The big difference was that their state tax incentives were capped at a dollar amount that the legislature every biennium has to reauthorize. And so I think the thinking was that giving them this additional flexibility to move the TIF around was a way to sort of accommodate the fact that they got less in state tax incentives than Job Z did. And what Representative Dabney's bill is doing is simply giving them a little bit more flexibility in how they can spend that money that they collect in the TIF districts outside of the districts, but within the zone. And so they could actually buy land for a private building, for example, or do pollution cleanup, which now they're limited pretty much to doing like streets and sewer and water and sidewalks and that kind of stuff.
Representative Lenny?
Thank you. Mr. Michael, since there really isn't an analogous exception anywhere else, if we were to do this, might it prompt others to be thinking about doing the same thing in other projects?
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, that's always a good possibility because people around here always look for justifications for what they want to do. And one of the things that I know you've noticed as being a member of the TIF working group a couple of times is that the desire to loosen up the pooling rules in a sort of similar way to this has been something that's a repeated sort of pattern of requests. So I suppose is the right answer.
Thank you.
Any other questions for members? If not, this being an informational hearing, we will lay this over and move on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Members, we do have a quorum, so we will officially call the meeting to order. Representative Morrow.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you should have some information in front of you. I apologize. We still do not have the jacketed version of this. This is going to be a bill regarding lignocellulosic ethanol and a production grant. Originally, the idea was to fashion this as a tax credit. But seeing that one grant would be a provider, one recipient would receive the opportunity, decision made to switch from a tax credit to a grant. I do not have a jacketed bill, so this will simply be for informational purposes. In 2005, the federal government under the North American Energy Freedom Act created an opportunity for funding for cellulosic ethanol demonstration projects and members. I trust that we've heard a great deal about cellulosic ethanol as being the next generation of ethanol production. And even earlier in this session, under the Renewable Energy Standards and other acts, we have been moving forward with next generation initiatives. Under this bill, a biofuel producer would receive a competitive grant for design and construction of a new plant or conversion of an existing plant in Minnesota producing cellulosic or lignocellulosic ethanol. These would be demonstration projects. We're using criteria similar to the federal program. This would be a one-year in 2008 competitive grant. There are three criteria listed here. You'll see them before you. That the Next Generation Energy Board, a group that we formed earlier this session in earlier legislation, would use these criteria to select a project that would actually produce ethanol from these sources. And the hope is that this demonstration project would be replicable throughout the state of Minnesota. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Members, any questions for Representative Morrow? Representative Lancheski.
Just a point for the committee and just a thank you to Representative Morrow. Yeah. Representative Morrow has been working on this with Speaker Kelleher, and it came up very late, and he was going to have a tax credit, and the committee has not, I mean, hopefully we're not too big a fan of the tax credit, so he worked diligently with Mr. Michael late to try to not have this come to us as a tax credit. This is the last committee that's active and can get a hearing, so it was really at my request that this be changed this way. So I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mark Porter.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you bringing this forward. And I know in talking with Congressman Colin Peterson, now chair of the Ag Committee in the U.S. House, this is a major emphasis for him. And I'm just wondering how, I know with the federal, I think there's going to be a lot of test sites around the nation where he's looking at, you know, where that can grow and that type of thing. So moving in this direction is the right way to go. So I applaud you for bringing this forward, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Representative Markmore. You're absolutely right. I had a chance to talk to Representative Peterson as well. And I, in fact, talking with folks in my district, we have an ethanol plant currently in my district. And while that is running well and the investment is recouping greatly for the members of the farm co-op that own that plant, we still have to look out for the future. And our current production of ethanol is not the way we're producing ethanol, as we heard even on the House floor earlier this session.
Representative
Davis. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else? Anyone else in the crowd want to comment or testify? If not, we will hold this information over and see where it takes us. Thank you, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, members.
Carolyn Chesky, would you like to do yours? Yes. Carolyn Chesky, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have this bill, Mr. Chair? We do have this bill. I'd like to move House File 2443 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. If I could move the A1 amendment as well.
Members, you should have the bill and the A1 amendment in your packet. If someone would, or I guess all those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is the ongoing discussion that we had a couple times, and I thought we would not go forward with it this year. And then after talking to many members and hearing from folks all over on these issues, I thought, you know, we better just have public testimony on this, and then it's still an option for the omnibus tax bill. So just to remind members, I have carried the card club tax a few times. It's come through this committee and made it to conference both in the House and Senate. I was compelled during Representative Atkins' testimony on lowering the lawful, the charitable gambling rate, to want to do something there, but actually was more influenced by Representative Dill, who was explaining the structure of the gross receipts tax, and called Mr. Michael and Representative Dill over the weekend and thought, boy, isn't there a way we maybe want to can do some reform here and look at these taxes. Additionally, in that discussion, Representative Rukavina, I think, raised the card club, which prompted my memory there, and I hadn't been thinking about our gambling taxes at all and started thinking maybe we should take a look at all the problems within within the taxes. So this bill is just my attempt to bring them out so everyone can talk about them. I don't have the lawful gambling or the charitable gambling reduction rate in here because we've already heard that bill. But it would be my intent to try to achieve some of that if we were as a committee going to proceed with this on this year. It's an attempt to restructure Representative Dill's concern with the gross receipts tax for the larger organizations sort of being forced to break up into little organizations to avoid the higher tax. And then would additionally ask the card club, who has not paid tax in its 8 years, to begin to pay tax. And so many members know, we'll hear testimony, but many members know that the card club does not pay taxes, and it has been an ongoing concern bipartisanly as to when they might begin to pay taxes. So I thought I would just bring the bill forward and allow the public to testify. And I see there is another amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'd have to ask Mr. Michael if that's mine. I don't think so. Okay. So that's it. It was really to get it out here so we could have a discussion and then see where we'd go with it next week.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I think what we'll do is we'll take testimony and then we'll open it up for questions. Right. Is there anyone that would like to testify for or against House File 2443? If so, please come down. take a chair and introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Randy Sampson, and I am the president of Canterbury Park Holding Corporation.
Good morning, Mr. Sampson.
I guess I will go first, and then we'll let Mr. Holton testify on behalf of his clients in the horse industry. I want to thank you for the opportunity to allow me to testify today in opposition to this bill. I want to give you a little background on our card room and kind of a status of how things are currently going, and hopefully then we are certainly available to answer questions. In 1999, the legislature authorized the card club for Class A racetracks, and the purpose of the bill was very clearly stated in the bill that it was to improve the horse racing industry by increasing purses. That language is directly included in the legislation. At the time, the horse racing industry was in a very desperate situation, and the legislature saw the wisdom of providing some additional revenue tools to revive an industry that at one time at its peak in the late 80s had provided over 7,000 jobs and over $200 million in economic activity, most of which was rural agribusiness related. And those numbers, I want to be clear, are specific to the horse racing part of the business. There are also our broader numbers of what the entire horse industry, but this is just the racing portion. The investment that the legislature made and the authorization has paid off, and the card club has done exactly what we said it would do back in 1999. Purses for the horsemen have more than doubled, and the horse racing industry, measured in terms of the number of mares and foals registered in Minnesota, has also more than doubled since 1999. Canterbury Park has added over 400 new jobs and is now financially viable. While the card club has been successful in reviving and maintaining the horse racing industry, it is a business that's very labor-intensive and operates on slim margins, especially compared to casinos with slot machines. At the time when we were working on the original legislation, our research indicated that after operating expenses and a return on the initial investment, that we estimated there'd be somewhere around 12 to 15% of the revenues that would be remaining and available to pay in either purses or state taxes. And at the time, the state had a surplus and the horse industry needed a boost, and obviously, again, the purpose of the bill was to help horse racing. So at that time, it was determined that to maximize the benefit to purses, a tax would not be imposed, a specific gaming tax would not be imposed, which, if it had at the time, would have reduced the money available for purses. The legislation includes a formula that at our current revenue level, the percentage works out to roughly 13% of revenue from the card club are paid in purses. However, due to the success of the card club and the fact that we all want to maximize the amount paid to purses, over the last 4 years we've actually paid 15% in purses, which works out to about $550,000 more per year that we paid to purses than what the legislation requires. Canterbury Park is a public company and regulated by the MRC, Minnesota Racing Commission, and all of our financial information is audited and publicly available. So I want to give you, you know, just a few financial highlights. But you have a pie chart. I won't go over it in detail, but it does lay out the, you know, illustrates what I was talking about, that it requires a lot of employees and a lot of operating expense to operate a card club, and after our corporate taxes and purses and operating expenses, it does leave a fairly narrow margin. And this is a pie chart is a separate P&L for just the card room. But I want to talk in total for 2006. The net income from our entire operation, which includes our horse racing, card room, and special events, was $3.1 million. That was our net income. That figure was the same as our 2005 profit and 19% less than our 2004 profit. So our profits, obviously, that means have not been growing the last few years and, in fact, have declined. In addition, for each of the past 3 years, if you look at our financial statements, you'll see that we have invested well over $3 million each year in capital expenditures, and which has been, the point is we've been reinvesting our profits in replacing and improving our facility and equipment. And the majority of these expenditures have been upgrades to our backside stable areas and training facilities, including the purchase and installation of over 1,200 new stalls on our backside, as well as building an equine therapy swimming pool for our horses. The 6.5% tax proposed on this legislation would result in an additional expense of approximately $2 million. Again, that's compared to our $3.1 million profit, so it would be roughly two-thirds of our profit from 2006 in this tax, which obviously would seriously impact our ability to continue to make the necessary repairs and improvements to our facility. Also want to say that this tax is not the only challenge we are currently facing. The internet competition for horse racing and poker is growing rapidly, and Canterbury, as well as other racing facilities around the country, are seeing the impact of it. We also have in Minnesota all the tribal gaming facilities except one currently offer card games that compete with our card room, and in fact there are over 70 poker tables at tribal casinos in Minnesota compared to the 50 tables that we're allowed to have by law. For year-to-date 2007, our horse racing revenues, as a result of this competitive factor primarily, our horse racing revenues have declined by 13%, and our card club revenues have declined by 5%. Again, that's for the first quarter of 2007. And I am sorry to say that this revenue decline has forced us in the first quarter to lay off some people at Canterbury Park for the first time since the track opened in 94. In addition, the smoking ban is certainly a threat that we see on the horizon. In other states that have had smoking bans, it has resulted consistently in 10-15% declines in gaming revenues where there are racetracks or casino operations that have been impacted by smoking bans. And as the tribes offer the same card games and our other competition is home wagering, where people would still be allowed to smoke, the effect on our business is going to be significant. I also want to, I understand the desire to assist the charitable gambling and understand that they will also probably see an impact, but it seems like this is a difficult way to accomplish that goal due to the relative size of the industry. That we have to tax a $30 million card club in hopes of providing relief to a billion-dollar charitable gambling industry is, the disparity in the relative size makes a difficult challenge to make the assistance significant. In conclusion, I do want to say that I find it encouraging that this committee is now viewing gaming, or at least Madam Chair, the author of the bill, is viewing gaming as a stable source of potential revenue to the state that could be suitable for funding priorities such as education, health care, and other initiatives. As we all know, for many years, Canterbury has been proposing enhanced revenue opportunities that would provide major benefits to the horse industry, as well as provide $100 million annually in new revenues to the state. Just since 2006, the last legislative session, Oklahoma has opened three very successful racinos, and Kansas just recently passed legislation to authorize racinos. Last session, we also had a proposal to add more tables and tournaments to our card club, and at that time we said that we would not oppose a fair tax as part of a plan that increases revenue to the horse industry. The bill in front of this committee will have a significant impact on our industry and will provide very little revenue to the state. With that said, I'm hopeful we can all work together in the future on a plan that will raise revenue for the state while also ensuring the continued viability of Minnesota's horse racing industry. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, I'll be glad to answer questions later if there are any.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thompson. I think we'll take our other testimony and then we'll open the questions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Court Holton, and I represent the Minnesota Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, which is the horsepersons organization for thoroughbred racehorses in Minnesota. I've been in that position for almost the entire tenure of horse racing in Minnesota, except for the initial passage of the legislation in the first 2 years. And I have seen all of the ups and all of the downs and have been very much a part of it. We vigorously oppose this bill, and I will tell you that if it were to be passed, somewhere in the second year of it, racing operations would cease in Minnesota. And what I'm here to do today is not throw out a bunch of statistics, although the ones that Randy gave you were very significant. I'm going to try to tell you how we got to where we are today. How could we get to such a precarious position when this activity is so successful in so many other parts of the United States? Because it has avid fans, and the activity generates great amounts of commerce in your agricultural sector. You've seen the studies. Even I've been surprised when they come back and tell us that we're over a $1 billion industry when we're down as far as we are in terms of profitability. One thing to keep in mind is, as we're looking at, there's only 5 states left of 37 horse racing states that do not have an opportunity for their racetracks to self-subsidize themselves through other significant activities, specifically OTB or Racino. By the end of this spring or summer, whenever legislatures finish up around the United States, judging by what's happening in the other states, it appears that we will be the last and sole remaining state that does not do that. Horse racing was hit like other activities when the United States went from Las Vegas only to gaming everywhere. We had an exclusive. You know, we were the only game in town, and now we're the smallest game in town. What happened in other states, and what we attempted here, was to get other gaming authorities at our facility so that we could enhance our revenue and recapture some of this entertainment dollar that was leaving in droves. We passed OTB. The legislature passed it. The court struck it down. You passed it again as a constitutional amendment. We came very close to passing that. It just was too confusing. It died on a close vote. Ultimately, we got the idea of a card club. And while we were putting it together, the state of California actually did it. We were pursuing Racino at the time already back then. That's 9-10 years as time has flown by. And mostly my group came up with this idea of a card club. And the first question, of course, is, well, who's going to drive out to the Canterbury Park and sit and play cards? And I said, a lot of people will do that. Well, how much money is it going to generate? I was the most optimistic and turned out to be the most accurate in the projections. But even my projections were small. And while it's been successful for us, it was portrayed at the time and turned out to be and has always been a Band-Aid. It's been a Band-Aid to get us by to a time when we could get something else and get healthy again, like we were in the late 80s. And we put forward proposals that, we're not trying to duck taxes. We put forward a proposal where the industry would pay $200 million a biennium in taxes. We've put proposals forward to capture state revenue on the massive internet horse race wagering that's going on right now in Minnesota. As you're sitting here, those radio beams or whatever they are going to other computers in other states or offshore, and money is changing hands, and you're not getting any of it, and we're not getting any of it, but we couldn't have that either. What the Card Club does for us is sustain the purses at Tenenbury Park. My people, who are your people, are the benefactors of the Card Club. And we get 15%, which would be more than a healthy gambling activities tax if there were one on this activity. We get our money from the purses that are handed out at Canterbury Park. That's where the money comes from. If it's a 12-horse race, 12 horses in the field, you got 12 ownership interests chasing after that same dollar. It gets, the effect of those dollars is geometric. I'm thinking right now of a foal being born in some barn by Stillwater, Minnesota, you know, coming out with all legs and ears and a long face. And, you know, somebody's going to check the confirmation of that horse, going to look at his knees are all gappy, they'll fill in the next 18 months. As soon as that foal hits the ground, people are spending all sorts of money on it. Somebody up by Moorhead is growing timothy. Somebody a little south of that is growing oats. Somewhere down by Rochester, somebody's putting metal to leather and creating tack. Over by Stillwater, there's a young girl, weighs 90 pounds. She's got the reins of a 1,500-pound animal in front of her, and she's about to slip up into the saddle. She wants to be a trainer. Somebody else is sitting in a Minskew college studying chemistry because he wants to be a veterinarian. There's a couple guys driving in a pickup truck coming up from Mexico. And they're going to get jobs at the racetrack because they're very good at what they do. And they're going to be asked to train in maybe some white kid from the farm, some black kid from inner city Minneapolis to work with horses. We have a lot of people back there who work this activity because they can't function working in normal jobs. They punch out the foreman or they do something else, but they find a place in the horse racing industry. We're already going to be laying people off next year because of the smoking ban. This will put us out of business. Just look at the numbers. I've been through it before. I was here representing this group when Ladbrook, who nobody liked, came to us and said, we've lost millions of dollars. We have other business interests. And the people that own the racetrack have developers that want that land. And they said to us, we got to shorten the meet. We got to lower your purses. We said no. They closed the racetrack. That racetrack was closed for 2 years. A lot of people went bankrupt. A lot of businesses went out of existence. A lot of people lost their jobs. We worked hard to get it back into existence. It could be a very successful thing if the state of Minnesota would do what by next year when we're here, if we still are here, we will be the only state not doing. Or we could tank. And when we do, that 6.5% that you're looking at, it's not going to be there. Nor are those jobs, nor are the other taxes that we pay. On the right side of it, several of my colleagues that have lucrative contracts are probably going to lose those contracts, too. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Members, I believe we have Representative Demmer with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I'm going to go backwards. I was going to comment with Mr. Sampson.
Okay.
I'm going to start out with Mr. Holton's comments about, he gave us a picture of all of the activity throughout the state that goes on to support horse racing, and I'm going to fuel the gas in his fire. I hear from people down in my district in the horse business that are raising horses, coming up to the park and doing that sort of thing. And I can testify to the fact that in my district down in southern Minnesota, this track is definitely making a difference and it's causing commerce to take effect and agriculture is being benefited. But my question, Mr. Chair, and I guess you'll tie into this or you'll empathize with this, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sampson talked about, and I appreciate you sharing your numbers. It gives us a graphic example of something we had a conversation about in this committee here, I think it was last week. You mentioned $3 million worth of net profit on the bottom line, and then you turn around and you had $3 million worth of investment in capital and equipment and facilities and that sort of thing. Mr. Sampson, if those dollars were to go away in taxes, and this is a classic graphic example of what we're talking about with tax policy, if the government skims that $2 million out of the three that you have, you can't do the capital investment that you want to do. And if you don't do capital investment in expanding your business, that means you can't, not only can you not hire more people, you may have to get rid of some of the people you have because you don't have the capital to do that. There's also talk about this, well, if you don't have the net income, you just borrow the money to do this stuff. Mr. Sampson, my question from you is, if you borrow the money, where do you get the money to pay back that principal on the money that you borrow? The principal, I'm not talking about the interest, that's part of your expense side of your ledger. Where do you get the capital to pay back the loan, and can that work, to borrow the money if you don't have the net income to invest it?
Mr. Sampson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Representative Demmer, thank you for the question. Your comments are accurate. And there is a need to continue to invest. It's a nice facility, but it's 20 years old. And if we were not to be able to continue to invest, eventually it would have serious negative impact on our business. In terms of your specific question, we do have we have some borrowing capability. We certainly could go out and get a loan to operate our business, and long term there is no, without other turnaround in the business or other legislative assistance, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. The obvious answer is ultimately you have to sell the real estate to be able to pay off the debt would be the answer, and when that situation occurs, then there would no longer be horse racing in Minnesota.
Representative Demmer, I think that's called the banks want to get paid back. I think that's your answer. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sampson, can you walk us through the pie chart and tell us how it would look, how it would change if the proposed tax were implemented? And we'll talk in a minute. I have some questions about how we might be able to make something like this work. If we don't add tables, if the facility is as it is today and the tax is imposed, how's this pie chart going to look a year from now?
Mr. Sampson.
Yep, Mr. Chair, Representative Coles. The quick answer to that is the operating expenses aren't going to improve, and in fact the way our business is going now, the revenues are down and your labor costs go up, there's insurance goes up, other expenses go up, so I expect that that figure to go up. The pieces that would be impacted, first off, the red piece, purses and breeders fund, as I mentioned, there is currently our law that requires, the law requires 13%. We're currently paying 15%. We obviously would be having discussions with the horseman group about reducing that figure to the statutory requirement so that we could still operate a viable business. All the other three would be impacted, that if there is an expense on the tax, gaming tax, your corporate income tax would be reduced to some degree. We would have to reduce the amount that we're putting into capital purchases, and then the net to Canterbury would be reduced. And I'd be speculating exactly how each of those would take place, but a 6.5% tax would be, it wouldn't change the blue. It would impact the other four areas. All would go down a couple percent, presumably.
Representative Cole.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sampson, I'm sorry, I'm tired. I forgot the question I was going to ask. It's been a long week. Oh, Representative Rickaby and I will, don't worry. Mr. Sampson, I know that in the past we've had discussions about this proposal. I know what I was going to ask. It took a while, but I haven't finished my coffee yet. The 13%, the statutory 13%, I wasn't here when that was initially, when this was initially proposed, but was that discussed as, I mean, was that put into statute as a payment in lieu of taxes? I mean, was that discussion had when this was initially put into place?
Mr. Poles, I would prefer to let Mr. Holton. I would prefer to let Mr. Holton answer that. He was here at that time and part of those discussions.
Mr. Holton, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I negotiated that deal, and the tax issue was discussed quite a bit. Maybe not in front of committees, but in terms of the negotiation of this proposal, and the ultimate, the argument that ultimately won out was that if we're going to impose on this racetrack gambling activity a statutory requirement to contribute what's now 15% to a commercial activity that benefits the entire state, and each one of those dollars becomes multiplied many times over, that makes a whole lot more sense than taking those dollars or some portion of those dollars into the general fund. You actually probably get a whole lot more money. But the whole purpose of this, as stated in the purpose clause, was to allow the industry to survive. So this was a Band-Aid. And the argument was, why put a Band-Aid on something and then cut the Band-Aid?
Representative Coles, before you answer that, we are going in session at 9 o'clock, and we have quite a few testifiers.
I'm
going
to wrap up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Holton. I'm concerned, Representative Lincheski, about the continued viability of Canterbury Park with this proposal. I'm concerned about the viability of Canterbury Park even without this proposal, the declining revenues, et cetera. I'm concerned about that. This is an important industry. Representative Lincheski, I think I know what's going on here, and I'm hopeful that this isn't going to be in the omnibus bill, but I suspect if it is, we're going to have a lot of discussion about card clubs and racinos and how many tables and how many tournaments. And you know, we've got the smoking ban that doesn't impact the tribal casinos, but it's going to impact Canterbury Park. This is just outside my district, Representative Lincheski, and this and the Shakopee Midwakaton Casino. Mr. Sampson's business is absolutely at a crossroads, and it's at a crossroads to a large extent because of what we, the legislature, are proposing to do. We are doing everything we can this year to put this gentleman out of business. We've got a smoking ban that's not going to affect his neighbor just down the road. We've got his neighbor down the road who said, "Oh, we're not going to play cards at our casino," and well, guess what? They're playing cards at the casino. We're doing everything we can to put this gentleman, who's paying lots of taxes, helping an entire industry survive, we're doing everything we can to put him out of business, and I think it's a travesty. I think it's the wrong way to go. I don't think it's good tax policy, Representative Lincheski, I think I know what's going to happen, and I guess fair warning, if it is in the bill, I think we're going to have a lot of discussion about racino and number of tables and things like that. So, certainly your prerogative to put it in, and I understand that you've carried this before, and the governor's had it before. I understand all that. But I'm concerned about the viability of this industry. I'm concerned about the viability of Mr. Sampson's business, and I hope we don't go there. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, in response.
Representative Lincheski.
And I know maybe as testifiers are coming down just quickly. You know, Representative Coles, I don't know what's going to happen. I was kind of smiling at you because I think you think there's something that I don't know. So maybe you can tell me what it is on the floor. But anyway, I do want to just say, though, the way I've always thought about this issue, if we need to subsidize the horse racing industry, then we should subsidize the horse racing industry. We should just give them money. But I've never understood why the card club shouldn't pay tax. So that's a different discussion. I mean, we subsidize lots of industries around here, but we don't let corporations not pay taxes. So I've not understood, and I've always felt that the argument was that someday these guys would come and start paying taxes. Now, they do pay the corporate income tax, but they don't pay sales tax on other things. I mean, we could have an emissions tax there. They have the ability to do that. That would certainly bring them revenue, and that's not happening there. So I do think, as this committee has wrestled with corporate subsidies all year, this is another one. And other than Job Z, it's hard to think of who's getting a better deal. So I just want you to know, Representative Coles, I do think the horse racing industry may have issues, and Mr. Holton's testimony that was painting that picture was compelling, yet to not have the card club pay taxes wouldn't, in my mind, be how you would address helping the horse racing industry. So there are certainly other ways for the Minnesota legislature to prop that industry up, and it's doing it in all kinds of other industries. So I've just never understood that. So I just wanted to respond. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair Notasky. We have quite a few comments coming from our members, but I think we should take the rest of this testimony, and then we'll open it up, okay? Gentlemen, please.
Yes. Mr. Chair, if I may go next, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Jeffrey Halpin. I'm one of the principals of North Metro Harness Initiative. We're the other entity that would be affected by this bill. We're the other track and card room facility. We're the new kid on the block. We're about to start construction Monday, hard construction, and we'd appreciate making a few comments about the impact on us of the proposed legislation. We are, North Metro Harness is a new tax-paying entity for profit in the city of Columbus, and we will also have we will have harness races, which is the other breed permitted at this second track. There will only be two tracks in the seven county metro area, Canterbury, as you know, and we will be the second track. And as I say, this bill only applies to the two tracks. As Mr. Sampson pointed out, the card room legislation was put in place years back to help support the horse industry. Canterbury's done an incredible job in support of the thoroughbred industry. We hope we'll do a comparable job in support and growth of the standardbred industry. We hope to open in the spring or summer of 2008. We will generate substantial jobs, taxes, agri, equine support, and the like. Our business plan obviously did not contemplate a 6.5% tax. Our business plan and a $60 million investment in our facility and related development is a significant investment that needs to be recouped and so on. To meet the needs and the requirements of both the city of Columbus, where we will be operating, as well as the horsemen who we will be serving, we've had to undertake some substantial additional commitments above and beyond the call of duty and above and beyond that which was required by state law. I'd like to just outline those for you very, very quickly to let you understand some of those burdens. First, we will be paying on the first $6 million a person 15%. Of card room revenues as opposed to the statutory 10% that will go help support purses to grow this industry. We've guaranteed the city of Columbus $237,000 in real estate taxes of an estimated $800,000 of total real estate taxes. No matter what happens, we will be making that payment to be a good citizen of the city of Columbus, to pay our way, to pay our share. In addition to that, we've promised them on an annual basis approximately $85,000 in public safety and services for fire, police, and the like, again, transcending our share, but a burden that we felt we had to undertake to be a good citizen, a good partner in that city for this development. We have proposed a bill this year, and the bill was unfortunately defeated. The bill, if adopted, would have permitted us to proceed forward as soon as our facility opened with a card room operation, which would have been there to support a good send-off for the purposes for to support the harness industry and the like. We would not have otherwise had to wait the 50 days, which is now required. Right now, we have to raise 50 days before we can open up our card room, which is the engine behind the purses, which supports, of course, the racing industry, just as has been the case with Canterbury. We also asked for all breed simulcasting, rather than just being able to simulcast at our facility the breed that we run, namely saddlebreds, harness horses. In other words, somebody could come to our facility and bet on the Derby under the all-breed approach, whereas right now they can only wager on standard breds. This bill was defeated. The impact of this bill was substantial. There were millions of dollars of investment, jobs, and the like. Just to let you know what this bill could have done for us and was taken away is the following. There was $25.5 million of direct impact from incremental patron spending, $16 million in wages, 650 people hired earlier rather than later in the year, $55.5 million of total impact on spending, wages, agri, etc., additional $3.8 million for purses, $3.7 million from incremental patron spending for all breed simulcasting versus being able to simulcast the breed that we will be running there, etc. This bill would have gone a long way to give us the start that we needed. Obviously, we will survive without it. It's a working capital issue, but nonetheless another burden, if you will, either added to us or a benefit taken away from us. When you then superimpose upon that scenario the commitments we've made and the fact that we did not get what we felt was not or shouldn't have been a controversial bill because it would have been promotional for the breed, for horses, for everything else that we wanted to do in terms of jobs, spending, taxes, and the like. Now we're having the possibility of a 6.5% imposition of tax, which could knock out up to 50% of our proposed or projected net profits. Obviously, we did not contemplate this tax when we prepared our business plan. We proceeded in good faith. We did not ask for any help from anybody. It's private industry, privately funded, etc. We will be a good tax-paying partner in that entity, in that city. We will do much as Canterbury did for the thoroughbred. We will do it for the standardbred. And equally important is the fact that we will be starting out now at a point where we will not have had the benefit of the last 8 years to get a business underway to support our horses, to support our industry, etc. If, in fact, this bill, which we hope is defeated, does proceed forward, we respectfully ask, and we have circulated a form of amendment that would give us a moratorium to permit us to phase in or be excluded from this tax impact for this 8 year period, so that we too can catch up, have the opportunity to run a business, to get purses, to support our breed as Canterbury has had in an effort to take this business forward. We appreciate the needs of the state. As I say, we will be a good taxpaying citizen of the state, of the city, of the county. We just simply want to be able to proceed forward with our business plan as projected. I'd like now to introduce my CFO and partner, Tom Fox, for some comments on the economics and the impact of this bill.
I think members, before we take any more testimony, as you can see that there's a lot of interest in where we're going here and what we're doing. This is public policy that we're looking at changing. I have a whole list of questions from members, and we have more testifiers that want to testify for and against this bill. I think at this time we will move House File 2434, 2441, 2435 to lay them over for a possible inclusion. And we will be in recess till the call of the chair. And we will take further testimony at that time. Members, we are in going into session at 9 o'clock, so we're in recess at this time.